We're going to go to Mr. Lawan and we can get some clarification. Eritrea.
Yes, my brother.
Eritrea.
To give you a brief history of Eritrea and the involvement, because Italy don't own nowhere, you know. I tell you what happened. In 1870, the Italians needed a coaling station in the Red Sea, and they bought the Bay of Assab by the Red Sea. They bought it from a sultan named Raita. Now, this was an Arab. You know, these Arabs caused a lot of problems in Africa, you know, my brother, long before the Europeans came, you know. And this Arab now take the liberty of selling to the Italians the Bay of Assab, because they need a coaling station for their steamship company, the Italian Robertino Steamship Company.
Yes.
And they bought it. That was in 1870. Now, for 20 years, they limited themselves just to that bay. But you know, these people stay. In 1890, now, they started creeping out and creeping out. As a matter of fact, they named the place, you know, Eritrea.
The Italians created that name?
Yes, they named the place Eritrea. It had to do with some, as the Romans had called, the waters of that part of the world. And they started flying their flag and started telling people now that they were responsible. But this was part of the grand design that Italy had, that from that launching pad of Eritrea, they wanted to get over into places like Sudan, in places like Ethiopia, Libya, and so on. And they gradually wanted to expand now, because Italy felt embarrassed and cheated when it saw other European countries encroaching. These were already long in Africa, in Mozambique, so on. They were fighting to get a foothold in Angola. The British were down in the southern part of Africa and other places. The Belgians were moving into the Congos. So the Italians felt cheated now, and they decided that although late, they would nevertheless make a run for it. And they encouraged the Eritreans. They really commanded the people there. They put them in fear. They captured a lot of people. They trained the Navy. They had them taking the oath to the fascist party and things of that nature. Now, naturally, this part was a part of Ethiopia. So when the Italians were entrenching themselves, the Ethiopians moved against them because they saw the grand design. And fighting broke out. Now, ironically, you know, when the Eritreans were fighting against His Imperial Majesty, the Russians sent them a lot of arms and gave them a lot of military support to fight against their Majesty. Now, with the military government in Ethiopia backed by Russia, what you now find is that it is the Americans who are now backing and supporting the Eritreans against the Ethiopians. So everybody come and back the Eritreans when it suits them, when they want to keep the country divided. But Eritrea, as His Majesty has always maintained, is a part of Ethiopia and will continue to be a part of Ethiopia.
Well, is it one does not give up sovereign territory?
No, you don't give up at all. Not a piece of land. And like I said, it was this Arab sultan that sold this bay for the Italians to even start existing on the soil of Africa.
Ayikwe Arma, a Ghanaian writer, in his book 2000 Seasons, which is a very important book for us to read, and in it he talks about the invaders of Africa, and he makes a distinction between the invaders from the west, the Europeans, and the invaders from the north, the Arabs. And we tend to forget many times that the Arabs who are in Africa, they also invaded Africa too, not just Europeans, but the Arabs also were invaders of Africa. 62178, hello.
Hello, sir, good night.
Good morning, my brother.
Yes, I have learned a number of things on your program.
Yes.
Since tonight. I am not here to beat down anybody, I just want to get some information clear.
Reasonable.
Earlier in the program, somebody, I don't remember the person, you mentioned that Selassie is God. Is that so?
That's a basic tenet of the Rastafarian religion. It's the same way that the Christian believe that Jesus of Nazareth is representation of God in the flesh. The Rastafarian faith acclaimed and acknowledged that the returned Messiah is personified in the living flesh and
right.
Rastafari.
Good. Now, what year did he come to Jamaica?
1966.
66. Now, then I was a child, so I might be incorrect, but I am of the view that when he came to Jamaica, a number of Rastafarians went to meet him with the perception that he is of God. my perception is that he rejected that. He said he wasn't. In fact, he was afraid of some of the people who said they were Rastas and went to meet him. Is that so?
I don't know. What's your source of information? Where do you get that from?
Well, I got it from adults at the time, by word of mouth. I was a child.
Yes, who told that he was afraid of some of the Rastafarians?
Yeah, who went to meet him. In fact, there was some kind of riot there.
If you look at the newspapers of the day,
yes.
the level of public outpouring for the... I mean, in fact, the plane could not land initially because of the thousands of people at the airport.
Yes.
And then lining the route, I mean, the never before any visiting head of state or even present head of state in Jamaica had received such a public acclaim.
But my point, what I'm trying to clarify is...
Yes.
Did he at that time say explicitly that he's not God, manifested?
Brother Miguel?
Yes.
On the question of His Majesty's visit? And the question arises,
yes,
with respect to his divinity.
Oftentimes that is repeated by many persons, you know.
And I wonder if the source of that, because I've not been able to find the source of that.
No, it does. Like I said, the closest I have come is Edwin Allen stating to the press that he asked His Majesty if he's the Almighty, and His Majesty said no. That is the closest we have come where Edwin Allen is supposed to have said that. Now, what the gentleman has said could never be so, because a lot of people don't realize that before His Majesty came to Jamaica, a delegation of Rastafarians went to Ethiopia and had audience with him.
In 1960.
So he couldn't come to Jamaica and free the Rasta when already a delegation had gone and he had received them. A delegation went to Ethiopia at his invitation. They spent months in Ethiopia, not just days, you know.
Without brother,
a delegation of Rastafarians went there, spent months in Ethiopia.
Brother Miguel, who was it? This was Alvaranga, Brother Mark.
Maplana and all these brethren.
And Martin Maplana?
Yes.
Yes.
And they went, as a matter of fact, they were authorized by the Jamaican government when they went to. And they had all, this is before His Majesty came to Jamaica. So this thing about His Majesty being afraid of, that couldn't be so, because already he was familiar with Jamaican Rastafarians when they went and talked with him. And they finalized and made preparations for his visit to Jamaica. Concerning the other aspect now about a head of state of that magnitude, when he arrived, there must be pandemonium, you know. Of course, people go and break down barriers, the security forces will have to move out of the way, the red carpet treatment have to be abolished, because people want to look upon the lineage of King Solomon and Sheba. There's no ordinary thing about it. For that day, black people felt free in this country. And thousands of black people went to the airport despite the rain and so on, went to behold and to see him. And along the route and all these things, there were thousands again who wanted to just get a glimpse. And thousands were at the stadium and all these things. And right throughout, although people naturally, the protocol and all of that was not maintained, but yet there was no injuries, you know. There was no deaths and all of that. And many persons got their wish in terms of viewing their Majesty. There was an article which came out recently which stated quite clearly that many governors, even before 1966, had written to the Imperial Majesty from Jamaica and from Britain trying to get a document from His Majesty denying his divinity.
And for him to denounce the Rastafarian religion?
Yes.
And he refused to do it his entire...
Of course, at no stage at all. Was this ever done?
This came out in Britain about 2 months ago, right?
This article came out now in January of this year.
Yes.
The article came out. It came out in England first, and it came out in the Jamaican newspapers that they all along from 1950s have been trying to get His Majesty to disclaim his divinity. If you notice, again, let us take the precedent of Jesus Christus the Christ. Whilst he trod creation, many times people ask him, "Who are you? Are you the God?" And he kept saying, "I am the I am he that thou sayest that I am," and of such nature. You don't say, "Look, I am God." People don't say that. This is why His Majesty said to the people, "Look, come unto me, all ye that are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Who can resist such an invitation so full of compassion? What is that saying to you? Come unto I, the I am, and I will take care of your troubles and your burdens.
62178, hello.
Hello, yes, I this brother was explaining there.
Yes.
I was trying to get a further question to him. My point is, I get the impression that what he's saying that it was Mr. Allen who made this report.
No, what he's saying that we have researched that point, where did that statement come from? And the closest that he can identify is a statement made by Edwin Allen that he asked His Majesty that question and got that answer. But there's no other record of any other statement that one could have drawn on.
As it is now, Mr. Allen defended his point, but there is no proof that Selassie actually said so.
That's the closest we can come to.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, take care.
Good.
68631, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
My brother.
First of all, congratulations on your achievement in the latest media survey, you know.
But brother, give thanks, you know. I just opened a telegram on my desk here, and it's from a Robin Grant in Kingston 5, and it just says one word. The same word you just used, congratulations.
Yeah.
But we know we did it together, collectively. You know, a space was created, a crack in the wall, and we tried to go through it. And what we're trying to do now is broaden that hole in the wall so that the spirits of our people can expand and glow and come to life, into the dawn and into the light.
Well, on today's...
His Imperial Majesty's birthday, we're looking at his contribution to world affairs and to answer the question, I mean, who does one say he is? How does one come to an understanding of who he is? Yes.
Well, before we go on to his contribution, I'd like to note from the discussion this morning and from things that I've read that in the history of Ethiopia there is always a conflict between the religions of Islam and Christianity, and the Arabs invaded Africa via the route of Ethiopia in the time of King Khalid, and they were beaten back, you know.
The North African area, I mean, it's always been one by which the Italians have attempted to get into Africa.
Yeah.
And they have succeeded in terms of, say, Egypt.
Yeah.
But they have been rejected in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, well, His Majesty's contribution to world affairs, I think, is in fact, he saw the death trap and the problems that the so-called third world has found itself in today. He saw that from as early back in his time and tried to warn especially Africa and the rest of the world about what was coming, you know. But I guess, as like the prophets of old who saw what the end of time would be, but in explaining it, you know, it was a bit beyond them at the time. But there is where I think he made a very valuable contribution in that he didn't borrow Ethiopia into debt, as Ethiopia was a lot more credit worthy and was a lot more eligible for loans and things like that, more than a lot of the country who, you know.
Yes.
And His Majesty tried to warn them.
Well, many of his warning went unheeded.
Yeah.
Because as our brother here pointed out earlier, the warning as to what was happening in Europe,
mm-hmm.
that preceded the events that led to the Second World War.
Yeah.
And in fact, he did say that, I mean, that the world will come to recognize what he's saying, and they did.
Well, now to say, who do I say he is?
Yes.
Well, first of all, I'd like to ask your in-studio guest, from the point of view of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, to define who is God and who is man.
Yes, my brother, give thanks. God is creator of man. You will accept that?
Yeah.
Therefore, it is natural that man is created by God. Therefore, God is beyond man, outside of man. God made his appearance in man at a particular time in the Christian history, which is Ethiopia, accept this history, when God saw the condemnation of his creation, man, and he sent his only begotten son into the world, born of a virgin without the seed of man. At that point, God make intervention on the plane of man. Christ had done a number of things and finally was crucified by man and if I may be even more specific, by the Jews and the Romans. The Ethiopians were there to assist in helping him Christ bore his cross.
Yeah.
Right? His burial was then enacted, and he resurrected from the dead on the third day. He worked along his disciples for 40 days and was ascended into heaven. If you understand that, then you will understand from what point you God is. Again, God is taught by the church in a triune form as Father, Son, and Holy Ghost or Holy Spirit. This triune formula is a oneness. There's no division between that triune. Although we say three, but it's still one perfect God. Now, this is how Ethiopian view God. And I'm going by the Ethiopian point of view.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, Doc.
Yes, sir.
Who I say he is, I say, well, then, he's the elect of God, you know, Earth's
yes.
rightful ruler.
May I add to say that Ethiopian emperor is always classified as an elect of God. So you're perfectly right there, my brother.
Yeah, because I'm in agreement with most of what you said in the earlier part. I mean, the recount of the history and the fact that His Majesty lived a very Christian life, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
2178, good morning.
Good morning, Doc.
Yes, sir.
Very interesting program, quite revealing. I would like to get a couple of things clarified myself.
Yes, go ahead.
What is the relationship between Jesus Christ and Haile Selassie?
Good question, because there are two points of view. You get one first and put you on hold for the other one, all right?
Okay.
All right. What's the relationship, Deacon, between His Majesty and Jesus Christ? How do you see that?
There is a typical blood relationship between both persons. They appear in two different points in history. Yet, it is known that His Majesty, Emperor Haile Selassie, born from a mother from the line of Ras Makonnen, which is normal to human birth. While Christ, born from the Virgin Mary, as it is written in the scripture, without the seed of man. And because of this, they will have to be put in two different contexts. His Majesty had fulfilled the role of a Christian emperor which is required by his state. For him to be a emperor of Ethiopia, he need to live a good Christian life. And if I may say further, this demonstration of a Christian life was born out when his wife died at fairly middle age, and he could have remarried. But the Christian principle, one man, one wife, he had his wife was passed, and he continued to do the work of the state and to serve his church and never remarries. Now, you will understand Christ never sort of mingled. His Majesty have children. Christ never think in that terms, but to do the will of his Father in preaching the kingdom of his Father, opening salvation to all humanity.
Caller, stand by. Let's get the other side. Brother Miguel, are you following that question?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, Her Majesty and Christ is one and the same person, separated only by time. That's the only difference in time. But they are one and the same person, one and the same spirit. And one will find that it is at different era of time that the Creator himself, which is the Father, manifests himself upon the earth by walking upon the earth in the divinity and the humanity of his Son, which 2,000 years ago it was Jesus Christus. In this time it is Imperial Majesty Emperor Haile Selassie.
So, caller?
Yes, I heard that.
You're hearing a point of view of the Rastafarian faith and a point of view of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church.
Oh, well, I take a lot on that point about time.
Yes.
When he mentioned that that 2000-year period, I'm not sure when that started and when it ended. I don't know if he's referring to AD1. If it is AD1, it's not only 1990.
No, 2000 is used as a round figure, you know. We're talking about the birth of Jesus the Christ, and we're talking about now, in terms of the present context, the birth of His Imperial Majesty in 1930. So 2000 is used as a rough, rounding-off figure.
Boss, I've been hearing that 2000 thing since I was, like, about very young.
It's a round figure.
Another question is, I would like to find out on this, is a perception that Teal Staffy has died, and I think our Prime Minister, present Prime Minister, went to the funeral.
No such thing happened.
Oh, okay.
A statement was offered in 1978 by the Derg government, claiming that His Majesty had died, but no evidence was presented to the world, ascertaining and defining the death of His Majesty. Deacon, would like to come in here.
Yes. I have spoken with an Ethiopian who was with us during the announced death of His Majesty. And after he went to Ethiopia and on his return to us here in Jamaica, I asked him, had you seen where His Majesty buried? He said to me that the Ethiopians are asking the same question, where was he buried?
So then, where are we?
Where are we?
Yeah, in terms of what can we know about the emperor?
Well, that's the question. That's why the question is left open. Who do you say that he is? Because no evidence has ever been presented to the world.
At least in the case of Jesus Christ, I think it's an accepted belief or a strong belief that he died and he resurrected. Well, and as Lon is saying that the emperor is a continuation of Jesus Christ. But there seems to be a consensus or a accepted position of the terminal point of Jesus Christ.
Yes.
But in terms of the emperor now, where are we?
There is no, for example, what we said on Thursday, August 28, 1975.
Yes.
The Daily Gleaner carried in giant letters across the top of the page, Haile Selassie dies at 83. Now on the following page, a report was given about his death early in the morning of August 27th.
Yes.
And then a capsule of his life and history.
Yes, yes.
But that's been a statement coming from the Derg government. There was never anything else presented to the world.
All right.
And let's say a man as despised as he was by the Derg, it would be to their benefit to desecrate the body and to have some symbolic process by which one ends an era. Nothing ever happened at all.
But he was a king ruling on a throne.
Yes.
Now, what has happened to all of that?
The Marxist government, which has governed Ethiopia since then.
Yes.
They have taken responsibility for Ethiopia since then, since they have dethroned His Majesty in 1974.
So then he has been dethroned. As I know it, he was rejected and despised in those last, after dethronement.
Well, that's not a question we need to clarify.
What exactly happened? And my understanding is that he was rejected and despised.
Yes.
And nobody seemed to know what happened after that. It would seem to me as if he was killed and secretly buried or his body burned or whatever, I don't know. But the issue of rejected and despised, I don't know if you could
get some information on that for you.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for your call. I'll go to that now.
Okay.
Yes, my brother.
On the question of His Majesty being rejected and despised by the people of Ethiopia, how did you read that when you visited Ethiopia and you're reading of the history?
No, man. Nothing like that, man. Nothing like that, man. People in Ethiopia, if you reject and despise a father, when you see the son or them children, wouldn't you stone them too?
Mm-hmm.
And I received notes of, great reception, man. Great reception. People say, we have him over here in Jamaica. So we have him right here. So,
what year are you in Ethiopia?
My brother, I've answered this question so much times now. There's a little area an earlier caller touched on. And there was a caller who had mentioned Emperor Caleb, great Ethiopian emperor, who is actually regarded now as a saint in the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. This Ethiopian Emperor Caleb, he ruled between 514 to 543 AD. He crossed from Ethiopia, he crossed the Red Sea, and he waged war against the Arabs who were trying to spread Islam. In 525 AD, he defeated them. And for 70 years, South Arabia was under Ethiopian control. And as a matter of fact, Caleb's successor marched and reached as far as Mecca in 570 AD. Now, 570 is the year of Muhammad's birth. And the caliph's successor had reached as far as Mecca, and then he decided to turn back. He speared Muhammad. So Islam should really, you know, pay gratitude and thanks. Concerning the whole aspect of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, I must point out, and I know we have reverend priests in the studio there with you, you're talking about a church, you know, that from ancient times, one must recall that with the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, they at one time was a very peculiar church in that they were one of the few churches that believed in the monophysite nature of the Almighty. What I mean by this was the three in one and the one in three. Now, what you find with most other churches, which came out at the Council of Chalcedon in 451, most other churches separated the humanity and the divinity of Christ. Now, the Ethiopian church, they held fast that the humanity and the divinity is one and the same, and hence the term the monophysite came into being. As a matter of fact, the person who advocated the monophysite at the Council of Chalcedon, he was banished and classified as a heretic. That is...
Athanasius?
Something like that. I think it's pronounced Diosurus. It was only later on now, when many other churches started accepting the monophysite nature of the Christ, that is, humanity and divinity must not be separated, that we have more respect growing, and Diosurus now is actually one of the saints in the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. So why I say I'm a little suspicious at this time, because for one to understand the fullness and the glory of this imperial majesty, one must understand that we praise him in a monophysite nature. That is, we do not separate the humanity and the divinity. We see it as one. In other words, the Trinity in one, the one in three, and the three in one. We do not separate it. And for years, my brother, there were numerous councils within the 3rd century after Christ, within the 4th century after Jesus Christ. There were numerous councils where they had to debate this topic as to whether or not to separate his humanity from his divinity. And it was much later on that this was accepted, that well then we should not separate them and that it is one and the same. And once you understand that, then you do not have difficulty understanding when we say that the I Majesty Emperor Haile Selassie, both his humanity and divinity stands as one and the same.
First, from what I get from the Ethiopian church, the Muslim in Arabia during the reign of Caleb, they were actually persecuting, it should not be called Muslim, the Arabs were persecuting the Christians in Arabia, and this is why Caleb invaded. However, we are neither monophysite or diaphysite. Monophysite is more over spiritualizing the divinity. We are not. We are just simple apostolic Christians who hold the divinity and the humanity in one, at the incarnation. We say that before the incarnation, it was two nature, but at the incarnation, both the divine nature and the human nature come in one. Therefore, the work of Christ our Lord, whatever he did physical, the divine nature was with him doing the physical work. And whatever he did divine, the human nature was there with him doing it, the divine work. So this is how we come by the oneness, the one nature. And the separation at the 5th Council in 451, this is where the original break in the church came that you mentioned of Dioscorus. At this point, the church divided into two different groups because of that division, which was inspired by that particular group. I wish not to call the name of that group on here. But, you know, it was changed here. One group was called the Chalcedonian because it was held at the Council of Chalcedon in 451. And the other group who would not go along with it had been called the Oriental Orthodox. And that group, Oriental Orthodox, had continued from that time until now. And they have not separated, they have not changed anything.
With that being the historical nature of the church, I find it strange that they have so much difficulty now to accept their majesty as we have now presented him. They really do not accept. In other words, the Ethiopian Orthodox Church presently, in dealing with his imperial majesty, they acknowledge his human aspect and so on. They are either fearful or, I don't know, in linking his divine aspect with the human aspect of him.
One point I'd like to mention here. When he was dethroned, it mentioned that he was put in a mud hut. But while he was in that mud hut, as the news said, he was receiving Holy Communion every morning from the hand of his priest. The Holy Communion is the very body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, how does you justify he receiving the body and blood of Christ? And as it read in the scripture in John, he that eateth my body and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me and I in him. So Christ is saying, whoever eat of my body and drinketh my blood is now dwelling in me, Christ, and I am dwelling in that person. How does you justify that, my brother?
All right. If you recall, when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, that he himself, when the hour had come, in praying, he said, Father, take this cup from me. If he had a choice, he would not have gone through with it. But he did not leave the choice with him. He left it unto the Father and said, well, not at my will, but at thy will. But really and truly, he didn't want to go through the tribulation that he was about to face, and so on. So similarly, with thy majesty, it's not a matter of just the communion of the body and blood of Christ. It's a matter now of that extra moving within the Father now, preparing oneself for that higher level which one is now, and that higher tribulation which one now has to fulfill in order for mankind to be saved. So there's actually really not much difference there.
I was just saying that something I wanted to clear for me too, that I remember that it was said that our present Prime Minister, Michael Manley, that he went to the funeral of his lassie. That's where he got this rod of correction that was so popular in the 70s.
No funeral. He went to Ethiopia on a visit, mm-hmm. and he returned with the rod and said the rod was given to him by His Majesty.
Okay.
That's the claim he made. The rod was given to him by the rod, and that's why he came back as Joshua,
yes.
and that is the rod of correction.
Right.
So not it didn't go to the funeral.
Thank you very much.
All right.
On this matter of the Ethiopian situation and the rest of Israel, you have been having an interesting discussion, and I think it's good that it's opened up like that.
Yes.
Now, I understand the Rastafarian movement. I'm sympathetic to the movement, although I'm not a Rastafarian myself.
Yes.
And I think, like in all religious matters, there's a tendency to over-spiritualize things.
That tendency exists. Some would say you can't over-spiritualize, but that tendency does exist.
Yes. For instance, this brother who gave the impression that everything was all right in Ethiopia prior to the revolution is not true. I visited Ethiopia. In fact, I visited Ethiopia a couple of years before the revolution. And it is not true that the people generally accepted the rule of Haile Selassie. In fact, what I discovered there, looking objectively, people were reluctant to talk. There seemed to have been an element of repression. I spoke to a woman in a pharmacy, and she discovered I was from Jamaica. And she asked me, is it true that some of your brethren over there believe His Majesty is God? And I told her, yes. And she said to me, listen, man, please, when you go back, just tell them for me that this is not so. We want to get rid of the man, and you people are making him a god, making it difficult for us. All right? Another instance I had was a case where a youngster came to me to talk to me, and I discovered that there was no broadcast of the discussion in Amharic. It was, I think we had it in Spanish.
French.
In French, in English, and if I'm not mistaken, in German, I'm not sure. But I sort of had an idea what Amharic should sound like. I asked the question, why is it there was no transmission in America. I was told it was a technical difficulty. But by that time, I had become aware of the fact that the nature of the conference was such that some of the views were very explosive and critical, and that it would not be transmittable. A strange thing about that too, because I had the opportunity of visiting the palace of His Majesty.
Yes.
And he asked me if I knew Amharic. I told him no. His aide said to me, then why did you raise this in the conference? You know, and I explained to him. I said, if this conference was in Jamaica, I would expect to hear it in English so that the local people could understand. Huh? His Majesty said to me, you should learn Amharic because there are some people in Jamaica who are learning it.
What conference was this you were attending?
It was a Christian, it's like WSCF,
uh-huh.
or Christian movement.
Yes, mm-hmm. I see.
But very liberal type of conference.
Yes, yes.
So I picked up that it was only a matter of time before things came to a head. The younger people, even some of the priests with whom I talked, were not in favor of Hale Selassie. They felt that he was not in tune with his time, that the country was way behind and he was not giving enough attention to the underdevelopment of the country.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying that the man wasn't a nice man or something or sort like that, you know?
Yes.
I'm being honest. I'm not saying he wasn't. He must have been good in a turn. But I'm telling you that what this brother was giving the impression as if the people were not rejecting him is not true. You must have had some who were supporting him.
Any response to that statement?
If I gave the impression that I was painting a very rosy picture, no. Naturally, in a developing country and so on, there is struggle, there is shortage of things and so on. You know, there are some people who have it hard. Certainly not paint a picture of everything being rosy. One had made the point because in terms of borrowing and non-alignment and all these things, and certainly in 1974 when His Majesty moved away from them, the Ethiopian treasury had a plus of great magnitude. Now it has a deficit of fantastic amounts and so on. So, you know, as to what my friend here is saying, and naturally there'll be some people, if there weren't people in Mengistu, would not have had any support in terms of opposing their Majesty. So what my friend is saying there certainly isn't so in terms of the picture. But naturally, one is talking about, by far, the majority, old and young and so on, in terms of the support of His Imperial Majesty. I went to Ethiopia in 78. Just before I move on, though.
Yes.
In answer to my learned deacon, who had mentioned about His Majesty taking communion, and he said, why would His Majesty take communion if he himself is the Christ? I went for my Bible, and in St. Mark chapter 14, that makes it very clear that in the Last Supper, when Jesus was issuing the wine and the bread, representative of the blood and the body of him, he himself ate. That's why it became the Last Supper. And St. Mark spells it out much clearer than the other apostles. He himself participated in the eating and the drinking. The eating of the bread, when he broke it, he also ate. And in the drinking of the wine, he also drank of his blood.
Yes, we're seeing you. You're at Mark 14, verse 22 to
yes.
25.
On the matter of the divinity of Hale Selassie, what I would like to, I remember that other gentleman there was saying that Hale Selassie was both divine and human, and he was talking about the monophysite position in terms of his divinity. Would he say the same thing about himself and me, that we are both human and divine? Is this a general thing about humanity? Another thing, I was saying that, you see, what he's talking about is a religion, and you and I know quite well that when it comes down to matters of religious faith, there are points at which it defies reason, because people are just not willing to reason. But, however, I see a strong connection between the Rastafarian movement and the early Christian movement. And I wish we had more time to see the similarities, because both of them seem to have started among poor people.
Yes.
Just like how the Rastafarian movement started among the poor blacks of Jamaica.
Yes.
I have a feeling that Christianity started also among the poor people.
But evidence support that, yes.
Yes. both have the same strong points and both make the same mistakes. And the question we are raising now about the divinity of Haile Selassie, I'm sure is the same question that people were raising at the time when the Christians claimed that Jesus was divine. I wish we had another forum on which we could spend some more time. A radio show, although interesting and good, is not the time to, you know, we just don't have the time. Other people want to call.
No, but
I think this is a very good and healthy discussion.
No, but what you're really outlining, you know, is another topic, another angle to look at this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Comparisons between the early Christian, and as you said, the strengths and weaknesses, comparing the early Christian church with the present Rastafarian movement.
Yes.
Can we learn something from these two phases in history?
Yes.
So that's something itself to be explored.
I think, and it's really, I've been thinking about this thing for years, and I see definite similarity.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, what we have in Jamaica, in terms of the Rastafarian movement, is the emergence of a religion in our own time.
Yes.
And perhaps given another 500 or 600 years, if the Rastafarian movement grows, it makes the same claim as the Christian religion does.
Mm-hmm.
If it becomes a real religion. So what we are privileged to have in Jamaica is to see how a religion begins and grows under our own eyes.
No, I think this is clearly something that, you know, we have to look at. You stand by. I want to talk to you off the air.
Yes.
And see if we can deal with this here. It'd be really nice one morning for us to have a direct one-on-one discourse with that group of brethren with Prince Emmanuel, see if they can help us clarify some of these thoughts. But the brother who just spoke to a while ago has really laid some foundation for some future programming, the whole connection between, the comparisons between the early Christian church and the current Rastafarian theological development in Jamaica, to see what can we learn from either one, and is there a movement towards a Jamaican, a theological perspective coming out of Jamaica per se. Deacon, there's something you wanted to add to this earlier discussion?
Yes. Where the opposition in Ethiopia is concerned, this came about because of exposure to foreign lifestyle, where, you know, advanced technology is concerned. His Majesty, who it is considered was not moving as progressively as possible as they would desire, is the said person who had given these Ethiopians an opportunity to go out to get external training
and travel abroad and to,
yes, and when they have seen these sort of lifestyle, they came back all hot-headed and feel that His Majesty was not doing enough. Again, you know, as it was pointed out earlier, His Majesty was not the person who believed to build this country on foreign loans. He wanted to use his own resources and to gradually develop Ethiopia. And therefore, these boys and girls who went out to Germany, etc., and came in back and seen the advanced technology, feel that, boy, His Majesty was not progressive enough, and they joined the clique to bring about these opposition. However, everywhere in the world you have opposition, and while His Majesty reigned in Ethiopia, it must be considered that at no time His Majesty had 100% of the Ethiopian behind him. It can be looked even from the time of the period between Ligiasu and himself, that those who were supporting Ligiasu would never be taken too kindly
to His Imperial Majesty.
To His Majesty.
So that was always there from the beginning.
Exactly.
Even before he ascended the throne, there was always that fervor, that dissenting group.
Yes. Well, it might have not been noticed before he ascended the throne.
Yes.
But when he ascended the throne, then, you know, our leader had been removed. Therefore, the follower behind this leader would not be thinking too kindly. They worked with him.
Yes.
But they were not thinking too kindly of him. And this is natural.
Good point. It's 2 minutes after four. We're on the back stretch now. We're not sure how much longer we can detain these two gentlemen, but let's take two more calls before we get back to Brother Lorne and just try and start summing up. 68631, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, how are you doing this morning?
I'm all right, and you?
I think you're the first female caller, you know. I mean, is it that when things are these kind of tough discussion that the women duck?
I wouldn't say they duck, they are learning, they're listening.
I see.
And taking a nice guess.
I see, okay.
And they don't get involved if they're not sure what they're about. They prefer to listen in and learn.
I see, okay. We're just trying to learn ourselves.
Okay, I'll say good morning to your studio guest.
Good morning.
And I'm not sure if the question I'm going to ask was answered before by the previous caller about the early
Christian church
and the faith there and the current practice of the Rastafarian religion.
Yes.
But I've heard that His Majesty, he lived a Christian life. How does this fit in? Or how does it oppose to the current Rastafarian faith? If you want me to expand on the question, I could, but I'd prefer to hang up and to hear the reply because I think I can absorb it better.
No, but before, what aspect of the current Rastafarian faith you're reflecting on?
I am not sure what is the practice now of the Rastafarian faith, but I don't get it to be a Christian faith.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, they're saying that His Majesty lived a Christian life.
Yes.
Is it in opposition to the Rastafarian faith currently?
Or is Christian, or the Christian worldview, the Christian lifestyle, is it still applicable to present Rastafarian behavior?
Right.
All right. Okay, I'll go to Mr. Lorne on that first. You can stand by your radio and hear his response.
Okay.
Miguel.
Yes, my brother.
We're on the backstretch now. We don't know how much longer we can detain you without charging you.
No problem, man. No, this beauties. Now, concerning the question, what people might find strange, is that Christianity, as enunciated by Christ, was being practiced even before Christ, In other words, Christianity existed even before Christ. Christ gave it that name. But the principles that Christ himself learned and followed, when he went amongst the different sects of people and he learned different things and he brought it out. But it was being practiced long before him, thousands of years before him, it was being practiced. So in terms of Christianity being followed by Christ and it is being followed by Rastafarians, it's just that we are not following the European Western Christianity. We are following the traditional African oriented form of Christianity, which is a big difference. And it is along those lines now that we as Rastafarians will always say to you that we uphold those principles from ancientry.
It's very hard for most Christians, to separate Eurocentric Christendom from what are the principles of Christianity, because they Every ritual associated with Christianity has been tarnished in some way by European culture.
Yes, and you see, a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the principles which Christ enunciated, he learned it from the Essenes,
yes.
A set of people which he spent a considerable amount of time with. And they were practicing those principles long before even Jesus himself was born. So it is along those bases that we as Rastafarians, as strange as it might appear. All right, I'll give you an example. Take the Anglican Church in Jamaica. Now, if any black man knew himself, he would never follow the Anglican Church, because that is a Sunday school, that is a baby church to the traditional African principles and Christianity, When the different councils were meeting, or like in the 3rd or the 4th century, after Christ, when they had all these meetings to make important decisions, and the Council of Nicaea and all these places, and no British bishops were in there, They must be a bit to us in terms of world religion and in terms of formulating policies and principles to guide morality along Christian and religious lines. So, what I made the point is that, generally speaking, we are long before even the 2,000 years now, because Christ came, 2,000 years since he came. But one must remember now, we have, the black man, we have recorded history dating 5,000-7,000 years before Christ.
Yes.
And we had strong religious principles from those times.
So that the parallel between Rastafarian belief and Christian belief is the parallel, the common root of both religions in terms of African worldview and religions.
Definitely, my brother.
Yes.
Definitely. From the ancient oriental aspect of the religion, we are there, and that is what we are restoring. So it might appear newish now, you know, but in reality it is really of an ancient order.
The other question was asked of you earlier, the question about the divine and the human. The caller wanted to know that, would you accept that those qualities are common to all individuals?
Yes, all individuals have a certain amount of divine and a certain amount of humanity. But when you're talking about the Godhead, you know, it takes on a different dimension altogether. When you're talking about the Almighty now, you're now talking about the Son of the Creator embodying himself in his Son to walk upon on the earth, the creation, for a specific purpose, a specific duty, to restore mankind to its original order, to reveal the book of the seven seals unto man, to manifest the glory and the will, to bring morality upon the earth, to destroy things, homosexuality, AIDS, lesbianism, abortionism, all these things. You know, this is the purpose of sending your Son upon creation, to rule over the earth. So therefore, it's not the same level like with an ordinary individual. You're talking now at a greater and higher level. You're talking about God himself manifesting in the human aspect of man.
I want to raise a question to both of you. In terms of the growth of the Rastafarian faith in Jamaica compared to the growth of the Ethiopian Orthodox faith. And I get the impression that many non-Rastas, many people in Jamaica, see the Ethiopian Orthodox Church as a Rasta group, whereas they do not see themselves as Rastas, so they get caught between in the middle. And so the people, there's some rejection from both angles. Do you see some kind of tension between both groups who supposedly have something in common on the outside?
Yes, it exists. It exists at the moment, and I would hope that within the near future, there could be some linkage, there could be some attempt made to unify that problem.
But wouldn't that be basically structurally impossible with the around the tenant of the Imperial Majesty?
Once the Ethiopian Orthodox Church returned to its roots of the monophysite nature and adhere to that roots, then they will have no difficulty. You know, interestingly, that that caller gentleman pointed out that one of the beauty now of the Rastafarians that people are watching it emerge and grow. And like he mentioned, about 600 years from now, he would like to see how things turn out. And this is exactly what will happen in a couple centuries from now, in terms of once it returns to its original nature, then 500-600 years from now, that same church will have no difficulty accepting the divine nature of His Imperial Majesty Emperor Haile Selassie. So I have no doubt, I have strong faith, and this is not a now thing, you know. This is not a 10-year thing. This is future, talking about hundreds, thousands of years from now.
Deacon, what's your view on this?
Yes, there are great differences. The church was sent to Jamaica in particular, by His Imperial Majesty, when he came here and saw Jamaicans responding to him in the dynamic fashion, in the way they did. He sent the church, and the church come. It has always been called the Rasta Church. Rasta men had written to Ethiopia inviting the church to come to us here in Jamaica. From its inception, the church had always had Rasta men as member of its congregation.
Well, wait a minute. Correct yourself. There's no Rasta men.
Rasta man.
Men is evil. I mean, Rasta man.
Well, okay. I was only...
Are the Rasta man them?
They are, okay. Thank you for that correction.
Okay.
Yes, from the inception of the church here in Jamaica, Rasta man has always been part and parcel of the church. The only thing is that they were confessing His Majesty, His Imperial Majesty, to be the returned Christ. The church had gradually educated them to the higher standard of the church, which is in Ethiopia. I'd like to touch on the point where the church going back to its roots. The church of Ethiopia had never leave its roots. The church, before it accepts Christianity, was practicing Judaism, which they accept Judaism from the point, as it was mentioned early on, when Queen Makeda, Empress Makeda, leave Ethiopia and visited Solomon. And out of that, Menelik came about as a son of both the queen and the king. He took Judaism to Ethiopia, where Ethiopia started to practice Judaism, and it continued to grow in the Jewish faith until Christ came about. And it's unique how Ethiopia received Christianity. As it is written in Acts of the Apostles, chapter 8, from verse 26 to 39, the narration is clear. It is an act of God. God directly have intervention with the church of Christ going into Ethiopia. From that period on, then, you know, Ethiopia had been following in this Christian teaching. And I don't see where and when, maybe some will say my vision is very narrow, but I does not see where and when the Ethiopian church would compromise its stance that it had held over 2,000 years to accept something new. During His Majesty was with us, he had not changed any of these doctrines. So I don't see who gonna come and change it.
Well, yeah, things that don't evolve, you know, tend to become extinct. So changes are... So Miguel, he's saying no, it's not possible.
Yes, well, time will tell, time will prove things, you know, as we go along. So
yes,
we give thanks, you know, really give thanks.
May I say, however, that you mentioned thousands of years. But remember, Christianity didn't take thousands of years to develop, because within the first 30, 40 years, there was expansion of Christianity to many, many lands, and people were accepting the old ritual of Christianity. And the discipline of Christianity is something that, you know, cannot be left out. It's not just Christianity by mere words, but Christianity has certain principles, has certain sacramental values, which yet Rasta need to be embody these things, or bring these things into focus.
Well, clearly there's room for at least two more programs here on this issue, because even as you say, rituals and sacraments, that very few have been actually instituted within the Rastafarian faith to this point. Stand by. 62178, hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Was it announced that the bulk of the Imperial Majesty's wealth was in Switzerland after his death? They found that out.
That charge was made but never substantiated.
But what have you got to deny that as...
No, I said a charge was made but was never substantiated on one earlier program. Some time ago, when His Majesty was actually in exile, he actually had to bring about a lawsuit against some company who had owed Ethiopia a couple hundred thousand dollars, because that's how broke he was and the country was. But a charge has been made, and to this date, there's been no substantiation of that charge.
But earlier on, one of your guests said that the funds were buoyant, the country had a good balance of funds. That contradicts the very thing that you were just saying, that you had...
No, charge was made, he had siphoned, no, we're talking about different, when he was in exile, that's 1935 to 39, during that time, he had to sue his Westinghouse or so on, in order to recover some funds, which was not, and we're talking about some minimal amount, a couple hundred thousand dollars, because one would imagine that subsequent, in the same way that Marcos, overthrow of Marcos, that the people have pursued identifying where the funds were. Similar with Baby Doc in Haiti, people have identified where the funds are and are making appropriate plans to recover the funds. Charges were leveled in Ethiopia, but we have not since heard anything to substantiate those charges.
So one must assume that the charges could be right?
No, that doesn't make sense to me. If somebody makes charges and you have a chance to prove them, a person innocent...
Then nobody disprove it.
No, that's not the way the law works. One is innocent until proven guilty, and we're talking about people who had all the resources at their disposal to identify funds, prove where the funds are. How are the people benefiting from those funds which they're alleged to have stolen? So unless you're one kind of person who like to believe rumors
not necessarily, but if you follow the situation where people have been starving in Ethiopia, as has been said, many had died from starvation, many had rejected him as a result of that particular issue.
Yes.
Maybe one of the issues that has caused his rejection was that.
Yes.
Then one must assume that, you know, funds, if one said before that funds, you had a buoyant economy where he was trying to establish his economy from inside without borrowing. Then what happened that so many people suffered under his regime, under his period?
All right, you listen, stand by, we have 7 minutes to go. Stand by, we'll try and get a response to this. Miguel.
Yes, my brother.
Yes, your final word. I mean, could you try and tie this together? The famine, the Swiss accounts and all of these things. How do you see all of this?
Yes, no, there was no such thing that His Majesty and the banker accounts at the Swiss banks. And this was disproved. The caller may have said that nothing to the contrary came out. Yes, something to the contrary came out, and his son, Asfaw Wasson, read a document which he got from certain Switzerland authorities disproving any notion that His Imperial Majesty had any accounts with them. So that is totally out. In terms of people rejecting their Majesty, one must remember, you know, you always have black traitors amongst I and I, you know. And even when His Majesty was fighting the Italians, whenever he's fighting them in front of him, and there are times when the army has to retreat, they have to fight another war behind them, you know, because there were black traitors behind who were supporting the white man. Just like you have it in Jamaica now. You have always had it with black people, that there are some black brothers who will ally with the enemy against the real forces. In terms of the famine, this famine thing has been blown up, you know, all over Africa. They show you all sort of things. Now, in Ethiopia itself, you know, there's so much food in some parts of the country, my brother, it would be unbelievable. It's difficult for me to describe to you. So much food in the southern part of the country and so on, in the northern part of the country. And there are other provinces that is not nowhere near the war, nor near to the famine, and they produce so much food. The problem of this particular famine, which is being highlighted and so on, is political. The present government is not going to assist those people with food from the other part of Ethiopia, nor from international agency, until they get their full cooperation. And even with His Imperial Majesty, there were some problems, there were some famine. These were mainly people who live a nomadic life. They did very little planting. And His Majesty, way back in the 60s, there's newspaper reports which show him going there and begging the people to start to change from their nomadic life and start a more settled form of agricultural life. So all of that is totally out. But we're just wrapping up now. Before I do, I would really like to hail the brothers and sisters at this time out by Black Rock in Portland, where we have the Nyabingi celebration, which is going on. The Nyabingi celebration, which starts today, the 23rd of July. It will be going on for 11 days, and I'm hailing all the brothers and sisters out there. I too will be joining them shortly, but we're inviting all brothers and sisters who have some time out in Black Rock in Portland to celebrate the 98th birthday of His Imperial Majesty Jah Rastafari. I also want to take this opportunity to hail all the houses of Rastafari, the 12 Tribes of Israel, the Ethiopia World Federation, the Ethiopia Black International Congress, the Orthodox Church, and all brothers and the Ethiopian International Unification Committee, and of course the Ayabingi Brethren. At this time, we'd like to hail all ones and ones. Happy birthday to Thy Majesty, our Lord and Savior, Jah Rastafari.
Miguel, thanks for your contribution this morning.
Give thanks, my brother, and keep up the great works.
We have no choice but to. Deacon, your presence here was most welcome. And we hope we're able to sort of, you think it's impossible to bridge the gap, but we hope that we'll, within the not too distant future, all of those who's try to reclaim Africa dignity and glory, we can bridge this gap and identify some common element between the Rastafarian faith and the Ethiopian Orthodox Church and try to create this new world, this new light that we so look forward to. Hopeful that more people here and will take an interest in the school you're trying to strengthen out in the Bull Bay region. And hopefully we can do that soon. Sure, go ahead.
Yes, so what I'd like to say is that for the Ethiopian church, we have been thrown into one familyhood. And this is a dynamic, very dynamic way to look at it, in that from the church came to us here in Jamaica. It means that we, who is of the church, does not only speak about His Majesty, His Imperial Majesty. We have been brought into oneness with Him, because this very body and blood of Christ, that His Majesty ate in Ethiopia, it is the said body and blood of Christ that we are eating in Jamaica. And therefore, Christ is divine link that link us into one family with of God. And therefore, you know, I'm encouraging everybody, you know, to come to the church, because Africa does not produce two or three Christian church, only one. And therefore it means that we should have only one doctrine, one teaching. I'd like to quickly hail all the brethren of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church and all black conscious people, and that we must strive for one unity. I thank you.
Give thanks. You can see that we're ending on a wide open note. I mean, there's room for a lot more dialogue, but that's how life is, huh? Isn't it? My pleasure to have been here to serve this morning. 98 years, His Imperial Majesty, today, 23rd of July. Many more questions to explore and ask, but you know, we ask the questions, we try to create space for people to grow, to get better. You have control over one thing, control over self. Let nothing hold you back, down, out. Try and be the best person you can be today. Till we meet again, tomorrow, same time, same place. Night, Doctor, over and out.